Thanks for joining us on the Port City Church podcast. More information about Port City Church is available at portcitychurch.org.
Good morning. I'm really excited to wrap this series up. We've been in for the last 4 weeks together. We're going to do this in a really unique way. As was mentioned earlier, if you like the music, I suppose you're just going to have to wait a little while because you don't get to leave early like some of you do. If you like the message, then you're going to have to stay to the end. So it'll be a lot of fun for all of us. But we're doing this for a reason. And part of the reason is from a question I want to ask you is how many of you have a discipline in your life that forces you to wait? I mean, most of us, right? How many of you, like, you love to wait, right? You, like, have built-in disciplines in your life to make you wait on stuff. I mean, right, most of us do like this. We avoid waiting at all costs. We try to time things to avoid waiting in any capacity. Some of you go to the grocery store, and as you start to approach the line, you're, like, looking to see which one is the shortest. And then you get in that line, and you're, like, counting. You're, like, making sure. Are you still winning? Because if you're not, you're going to be really upset that you didn't pick the shortest line. Like, we avoid anything that slows us down. Our whole lives are built on efficiency, getting in and out of places as quickly as possible, making things happen, getting things done. This affects our relationships. It affects all sorts of things. And it especially is where temptation often hits us more pointedly than anything else. The Bible offers a promise like this. It says, those who wait on the Lord shall renew their strength. Those who wait on the Lord shall renew their strength. If we're really honest, what a lot of us are doing when we're waiting, we're simply waiting on things to be different. We're simply waiting on things to be different. What I want to do in the next few minutes we have together, we've been through this, if you've not been here, again, using the story that you just heard earlier of Jesus in the desert and his temptation. And what's really interesting to me is the things he was tempted with and the way it ended, that this 40-day season ended two different ways in the two different Gospels. One, it says that the angels came and tended to him. There was a moment where there was some rest and recovery and necessary ministry that needs to happen. Something needs to happen in your soul at the end of these seasons. And then number two, in Luke's version, it says that the devil was waiting for an opportunity to come back and tempt him again. And what it tells us, you and I, is that while, yes, we need to draw a line and say we're going to declare this over, we're going to say we're going to stop and we're going to let something happen in our souls, that's important, we're going to do that this morning, but also you need to be aware that he's coming again. That just because you've weathered one season of temptation, or maybe you've done pretty well for a week or 2 weeks or whatever, it's coming again. That's what I want to explore, is how do we get to the heart of this so we know actually where we're fighting. So the three things that Jesus was tempted with, well, let me do this. Before we jump in this, the two ways that human beings, and this is kind of a generalization, but you can see if you fall into one of these categories, the two ways that human beings tend to deal when things don't go like we want, when the waiting seems to begin, when things seem to be uncertain, the two ways that human beings deal with this, and it's in one of two ways. Number one is there are escapists. Some of you, you just escape. You check out. This is where a lot of addictions set in. Netflix falls in this category, right? We just check out. Some of you've checked out of relationships because you know it's like not going to go like you want, so you just say, I don't care. I'll just do whatever you want to do. We just sort of check out of whatever's in front of us. And the second way people tend to deal with this, humans tend to deal with this, is we control them. We just rah, harder and faster and stronger and more control. And usually these two are related to each other because we often almost always try to control it. And we realize we can't, then we escape. And so we create this sort of patterns in our lives and we miss out on what it is that is happening on the inside of us where the work actually gets done. And this is really important for us to understand. Because last week we talked about this and we used this passage in Romans chapter 5. And I want to read this together. Romans chapter 5, it says this. It says, we also glory in our sufferings. Now, to glory in your suffering doesn't mean to go, yes, I'm glad this is happening. The word glory means to ascribe weight, to recognize there's a significance to it. And so what happens is we have to say, we glory in our sufferings by saying, this thing that we're dealing with, this temptation, this pattern, it matters. And he says, the reason is because our sufferings produce perseverance, and perseverance produces character, and character produces hope. I love this last line, and this hope does not put us to shame. So we read that verse, and most everybody in here, if you've read that before in your Bible, or if you just read it for the first time, you can sort of make sense of this. And you look at this and you go, okay, we have this idea of sufferings, and so we have to assign it a weight. We go, this is what I would do in my journal. I go, okay, we assign this a weight. This matters. This is what we talked about last week. Instead of trying to figure out, oh my gosh, why is this happening to me, and try to understand, we have to just stop and say, okay, this matters. The second part of this is this suffering then, we understand this, it begins to produce in us a stick-to-itiveness. We are willing to endure or persevere. Persevere, that's not right. You get it, the idea. We're willing to persevere. That was right, isn't it? Persevere, that was right. Anyway, you get the idea. We're willing to stick to this. We're willing to stay put. And this builds what? Character. We all know this, right? We all go, yeah, duh, we all know this. But this right here produces in us, it says, a hope. And this hope does not put us to shame. It does not shame. So we look at this, and it's easy to think that we know what this says. Oh, we give weight to it. It helps us stick to it. It builds character, and that character builds hope. And that makes sense in our heads. But when you think about it, is what kind of hope doesn't cause shame? Like, what does this mean? So I was thinking about this, and I was trying to think of what this means. And I read a couple of passages in the Old Testament. Now, what I'll do is I'll look at this and say, what does this mean? Psalm 22, it says this. In you they trusted, and they were not put to shame. In you they trusted. In you, God, they trusted, and were not put to shame. Another place in the Old Testament, and you're looking for clues. Psalm 119, uphold me according to your promise. Like, let me rest on your promise that I might live, and let me not be put to shame in my hope. When I was 7 years old, I ran away from home. Now, I don't know if you ever did this when you were a kid. I had enough of the oppression, right? 7 years old, this is not fair. So I packed a small bag and I said, I'm out of here. I'm going to venture out on my own because life exists there. It does not exist here. So I got out of my house. If I recall correctly, I walked down to the end of my road where it comes to a major, I walked to the end of my road and thought, I'm not even old enough to cross the street, so I better go back. So I walked back, but I was not going home. Because I'd already decided this is what I was going to do. This is where my life was going to be found. So I went beside our house. We had this big bush in the back next to our house. And I snuck around behind that. And I sat there with my suitcase in behind the bush. And I began to contemplate, what am I going to do with my life? And I realized very quickly at 7 years old, nothing. I was going to do nothing with my life. So as I sat there, I tried to figure out what to do. And then all of a sudden, all the emotions start to rise because now you're faced with the fact that I probably have to go back home, which is just right around the corner, interestingly enough. I have to go back home. I have to walk back in and face my parents and tell them that I couldn't make it on my own, right? Do you know what that emotion is? That emotion is shame. That emotion is I set out to do something that my hope was in my 7-year-old capacity to make a life for myself apart from the oppression I was experiencing in my home. And I set out and I could not do it. And to return to that left me shamed. It was disappointment. See, what this is about is what he's saying is that we don't want to put our hope in something that turns out to be wrong or false hope. And this is why this is so important when you think about this, because a lot of us, what happens when we're waiting on things to change, our hope is in the fact that things will be different. And what this is about is not hope and things will be different, but hope that you will be different, that you will become who you were intended and designed and created to become. This is why the work is so important. Otherwise, you will fight temptation from circumstance to circumstance to circumstance, and you'll put your hope, and when circumstances are different, things will be better, and guess what happens? They are for a season, and then he comes back, and you're tempted again. And when he comes back, and you're tempted again, you're disappointed, you're shamed, and you put your hope in things that will not suffice. And what he's inviting us into, he says, hey, if you let me finish the work in you, if you let me build into you who you are called to be, if you allow this to do that work, you will find a hope that will never, ever disappoint you. You will never be You'll never be ashamed or disappointed with who you've become. And this, what this does, this frees us because now circumstances no longer define who we are. We get to bring ourselves into them. And that's what we're talking about. That's why this is so important. This is why you got to get underneath where these temptations are. Because what temptation is it fundamentally pulls you away from the life that you're called to live. We think that life is somewhere else. Look at what Jesus said here. I love this. This is, or not what Jesus said. This is what it talks about in Hebrews chapter 2. And this is what I want you to see. This is talking about Jesus. It's a book in the later on in the New Testament, and it's talking about really the parallel of Jesus as our high priest, as the one who's gone before us, and what he did for us. And I love this, Hebrews chapter 2. It says, since the children, that's us, have flesh and blood, Jesus, who's he too shared in their humanity so that by his death, he might break the power of him who holds the power of death, that is the devil. So basically what he's saying is that because we're flesh and blood, Jesus had to be flesh and blood. Because we're flesh and blood, God had to enter into humanity to do something about humanity's condition. And what he was doing in his death is he was breaking that thing. What perseverance does, what temptation does, what struggle does, is it breaks the power of the flesh in our lives and allows us to live from this place that's deeper, where our heart is, where we're called to live from. And so he's breaking that. Most of our temptations are just our flesh being pulled all the time, and we leave our heart exposed and just destroyed. And he's saying there's a different way to live, and he came to break that power in our lives. And he says, and to free us from all those, free those who all their lives were held in slavery by their fear of death. For surely it is not the angels he helps, but Abraham's descendants. And what he's saying there is basically, Jesus didn't do this for the angels. He did this for us, for humans. He did this for you and he did this for me. And what he says is he wanted to set you free from a fear, from the fear of death. Now, a lot of us go, well, okay, the fear of death, that's a big deal, but it's not that big of a deal because that's a long ways off. I mean, longer for some of us than others. And it's a long ways off, but the fear of death, if you think about this literally, if you take the literal idea that death is basically separation from life, what he's saying is that anytime you experience disappointment or you won't get what you think you need to make you feel alive, it causes fear, right? When you don't get that job, when you don't get into that college, when you don't get that girl or that guy, when you don't get that the money, whenever you don't get what you think is going to bring you life, that's fear of death. I think it's fair to say that. He says that this is the essence of everything. And as I thought about this, it really corresponds because what happens is whenever we get into these, well, I'm going to hold on just a second. Whenever we get in these situations, we start worrying, we start becoming afraid, we are afraid, and it pulls us in a direction. And he goes on, he says this, for this reason he had to be made like them, this is talking about Jesus, fully human in every way, in order that he might become merciful and a faithful high priest in service to God, that he might make atonement for the sins of the people. He entered into flesh and blood to identify with what you and I are going through. To enter in to flesh and blood, to understand what it is like to be lured by the pull of the flesh. And I love the way this ends in verse 18. Because he himself suffered when he was tempted. Because Jesus suffered when he was tempted, he is able to help those who are being tempted. He suffered temptation. See, we're sitting there and you're going, well, if I were more mature, I wouldn't be struggling with this. If I were a better person, I wouldn't keep doing this. And what he's telling you is that it doesn't really matter what you think about it. It's the fact that if you are struggling with something, Jesus understands. He says he came. He said, I don't think that when Jesus was in the desert and Satan said, hey, turn these stones into bread, he was like, well, you know, I'm the Son of God. It's really not bothering me, but so that they'll see this and know that I had to do this. So I'm going to quote the verse and turn it down. I think it was a real struggle for him. Like these temptations were real. He entered into this and he felt the pull and the struggle of what you and I face. And it says, because of that, he can help us. He can help you. He can help me. He has helped me. There are numerous things in my life that he has freed me from. There are numerous things in my life that have forged me and my character in places that I would not train. And the thing is, you've got to draw these lines. You've got to declare them over and you've got to let something happen. There are two things that our muscles need to recover after you finish work. When I was working out yesterday, I'm just kidding, I wasn't. When I'm working out, you do this. And when you get done, you get this soreness. And what you have to do is you have to stretch. You have to let your muscles rest. And there's two critical components for what they call recovery. All the soccer players now, when they get done with their games, they go drink chocolate milk because it's recovery, right? There's all this science about recovery. Gatorade has recovery drinks. It's all about recovery. You get done with exerting yourself, then you have to have recovery. And recovery requires two things. It requires rest. You've got to stop flexing those muscles. And number two, it requires nutrition. What Jesus modeled for us is both of these things. When the angels came and ministered to him, it was a season of recovery. And the nutrition, I think, comes on feeding on God's word. I've lived by this verse since I was in college. God's word have I hid in my heart that I might not sin against God. I committed myself to memorize scripture over the course of my life, believing that, trusting that, hoping that when temptations came, I could quote verses like Jesus did, and it would arm me and help me in this war for my flesh. And so when we think about this, this is just what you're going to have to do. There's no shortcuts to this. We have devotions online that will help you go and read God's word and look at it and think about it and just let it get in your mind and hopefully seep into your heart. I can't recommend that strongly enough. But what I want us to do today is I want us to draw a line. And I want us to draw a line and say, God, this is where I am and this is what I want to do in this waiting. I'm going to discipline myself to wait and not wait for things to change, but I'm going to wait in such a way that draws your strength. Those who wait on the Lord shall renew their strength. And in renewing our strength, I want for you to renew your hope, a hope that will not disappoint. So you ready? This is what we're going to do. Now, I'm going to give you a list. And this list is based on two lists that I've encountered. One is the seven deadly sins. Perhaps you've heard of that. It's an old classic from way back when that the early church and such has come up with, these seven sins, and pride is mentioned among them. But I don't really talk about pride in that way. I think pride underlays every other sin. And the second thing that's in there, a lot of people put fear in this list, and I don't put fear in that list either, because I think that pride is the foundation of all sins, and fear is the motive of all temptation. Okay? Pride, this is exactly what happened in the garden. God told Adam and Eve, he said, of any tree in this garden you can freely eat, but of this one tree you shall not eat. From the day that you eat this tree, you will surely die. And Satan comes in, he says, oh man, he's not going to let you die. There's no way he'd do that. In fact, what he's doing, God's holding out on you. He's not going to let you have what you really want. And he begins to appeal to their fear. And in that he says, you know what? You need to be afraid that God's holding back on you. You need to be afraid that you're not going to get what you want if you trust him. So therefore, you need to take matters into your own hands. You have some control over things. And this is where it all falls apart. When you're in a marriage and you're not afraid you're going to get what you want, you become afraid that you're going to get what you want, afraid that things aren't going to work out, afraid your desires aren't going to be met, you start looking in other places, right? It's like this in everything. There's always these root fears and root, it feeds our pride. The way I wrote this out, and I would say it to you, is this way. Number one is that temptation always leverages fear. Every temptation that you face leverages your fear that you have about something. What is it? Are you afraid you're not going to measure up? Are you afraid you're going to be found out? Are you afraid that maybe perhaps something an opportunity will pass you by? Are you afraid of, what is it your fears that drive this? And fear always fuels pride. It makes you suck up and do something about it or escape. So we're going to look and try to find a core sin. And this is where the other part informs us. A friend of mine talks about 9 core sins, and I'm going to give you 7 and see how we do. So what I want you to do is I want you to, and what I mean by core sin is I think everybody has a thing that gets them. So whether the temptation is around you know, pornography or around hoarding money or around gossiping or around putting people down or around, but whatever it might be, there's something underneath. There's some core thing that's at the base of it. And so I'm going to give you a list of things. Let's see what you can identify what your core sin is. You might have 1 or 2, maybe 3 of these, but there's probably one that sticks out more than anything else. So the first one, the core sin of lust. Number 2, greed. Number three, gluttony. You can stand when I call your name. Just kidding. Number four, lying. Envy. Laziness. And in case I left anybody off the list, here's the thing you gotta be careful of. You got really quiet. But that means it's completely irrelevant or everybody's found themselves somewhere. Because here's what's interesting. A lot of the behaviors that we would categorize as sinful behaviors that are lured by our temptations might be addressed in a lot of these different ways. Lust is not just sexual lust. Lust is the fact that if you just had something else, your life would be better. And so you're chasing everything. It's just, it's a lust for power. It's a lust for control. Sometimes those things manifest themselves in pornography or sexual behaviors, even behaviors that our culture says is okay. But these things are wreaking havoc. Why? Because you're not built for this. This is about who you're becoming. This is about when we persevere in these things, it does something to our character. When we give in to these things, it does something to our character. It changes us. And so what has to happen when we talk about lust, greed is a fear of not having enough. The greed is fundamentally not about getting, it's about holding on to. It's about making sure that you are never without. Some of you are terrified and you miss God's provision, right? That's one of the temptations, that we don't trust his provision, so we do because we can. We turn stones into bread. We talked about that. Gluttony, right? This is just, hey, we can, so we do. Lying. There are some of you who resort to lying, and it's not because you're a pathological liar. That might be, but more than likely is because you are afraid that the truth actually won't set you free. When we talk about saying no or replacing a stronger no with a better yes, we're talking about, how do you connect these things? How do you connect the truth to freedom? How do you connect fidelity with your eyes and your mind to faithfulness? How do you connect these things? When I realized this in my own life, when I realized this in my marriage, when I realized this as a young man, I struggled in my thought life, and I realized, how do you just say no to this over the course of your life? How do you just do this long enough until you realize that what you're not just saying no, you're saying yes. You're recognizing that what is happening in my eyes and what is happening in my mind affects my heart, and that it is deeply connected to the fidelity that I want in the relationships that I treasure and trust. It's a better yes. When I'm saying no to this, I'm saying yes to the intimacy that I long for within the context of my marriage. When I say yes to when I say no to telling lies or projecting myself as more important, I'm saying yes to the freedom that is found in trusting in the truth. We've got to get to this place. What about laziness? It's laziness is not just laying on your couch all day. Okay, everybody wants to do that. Right? Laziness is about laziness of thought. I mean, we live in a culture right now where people won't pay attention to anything if it doesn't entertain and bedazzle them all the time. That's lazy. It's lazy thinking. It's that we feel like we have no control of our mind unless someone occupies it and entertains us and catches our attention. This is a really dangerous place for us to be, and it just leads to other things. Right? When you are lazy in your thinking, you're going to think in the pattern of least direction. It is going to be deadly to your soul. Some of us have just gotten, we default to these things. We default to these things. Anger is a way to control other people. So if you haven't had an outburst of anger, but everybody knows it's just under the surface, and don't mess with Dad. And so you control everything by this. And we don't ever become free. We don't ever find the freedom to do this. You've got to figure out what's going on underneath. That's what I want us to help us do. And here's how this works. It works by waiting. When he talks about waiting on the Lord, waiting is not wasting time. The problem with us is a lot of times we don't stop and do this. We don't draw this line and go, God, what is really going on here? The probably three or four things I struggled with that were more intense in my life than any other temptations took me years to sort of sort through and to really say, God, why does this continue to happen? Because you know what happened? Every time I started to buy into this temptation, every time I started to fall in, I would almost always blame other people and I would run from one thing to the next thing to the next thing. For some of you, that's the whole point. We do this in churches. We do this in community groups. We do this with friends. We do this with relationships. As soon as we get to a point where we can no longer, we're like, well, this is your fault. If you were different, I'd be different. We don't ever allow God to do his work in us because we're going from thing to thing to thing. Perseverance produces character. I want to tell you how quick this can erode, how quick this can erode. These last 2 weeks have been among the most difficult that we've faced in quite some time. My dad, who moved here about a year ago, my mom and dad did. They've been in tremendous health. And about a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago, he started experiencing some symptoms that caused some problems. He ended up having emergency surgery about a week and a half ago. We got him into rehab. We thought he was doing great, and he began to lose function of his body. And it's a very scary thing. So we've been there with him, you know, trying to do everything we can. We've got great doctors. Everybody's working. You know, we're still not sure what's going on. So even last night, you get a call in the middle of the night. He's confused. You know, all these things are going on like real time. So I'm praying for my dad, right? Obviously, and this is how I pray. I want to model this. This is not perfection. This is modeling. This is what I do. I sat down and I said, God, what I really am asking you for is to bring some peace to my dad as the days pass. That's what I wrote. That's a good prayer, right? I wrote this in my journal. Please bring, and I do this because it makes me focus. And you know what I realized real quickly? Do you know what that means? You know what that, as days pass, you know what happens when things are hard? Because you know what we usually say, when things are hard, how fast do the days go by? Oh, it's like, when is the bell gonna ring? And when the days are hard, we want them to just go, phew, phew, just get past. You don't find peace because days pass. So I immediately changed. This is exactly what I did. I said, oh, no, Lord, don't give peace as the days pass. Provide peace as the days come. Because one is about looking for relief from the circumstances that we find ourselves in. The other is about saying, God, I don't want to miss what you are doing right now in this moment. Because otherwise I'll experience peace simply because it's over. And you don't learn about God. You don't learn about yourself. You're not forged into his image. But when you learn about a peace that transcends our understanding while it's actually happening, it changes. Do you see? Every temptation that you face pulls you away from that. Everyone. Every time you say yes to those temptations, you are being pulled away from the kind of person that God has called you and created you and actually empowers you to be. So whenever we say no to these things, what we are saying yes to is to become the kind of person that he's called us to be. And it's found in this season where it feels like we're wasting time, but we're not. We're waiting on the Lord and renewing strength. So what we're going to do for the last few minutes that we have together today, kind of an extended way. Some of you will go, man, I got to get to lunch, and that'll be so tempting because we are terrible waiters. We don't like to wait. We're very impatient as a people, as a group. So I'm going to just ask you to kind of discipline yourselves, and we're going to take on a posture of waiting, because I'll tell you, when you begin to see what happens in these moments after you get through that first, like, and you kind of settle down, you'll start to see and sense the peace and the presence and the power that God sort of has in changing us. And I love this because the words of this song, it starts off and it says, slow down, take time to find God in the waiting. Don't be so consumed with getting somewhere else that you miss the fact that God is with you and he is bringing something in you. He is completing a work that he has promised to begin right where you are. So I'm gonna invite the bands to come out at all of our campuses, and we're gonna just take a few moments and we're gonna do this together. And the song says this, to take courage, Take courage, my soul. He's in the waiting. We want to do this in a way that will renew our strength and that will recover a hope, the hope of who we've become that will not disappoint. Can you imagine never again having to depend on a circumstance to be disappointed, to not be disappointed? Never again. That's the promise that he gives us, and that's the hope that he wants us to build our lives upon. Father, I ask that you would meet us here as we just kind of create a space to wait. For some of us, we're just looking forward to getting to the beach, or we're looking forward to getting to something fun, and this just seems like, For others of us, this is the only respite we've had because we've got a diagnosis, or we've got financial issues, or we've got a relational train wreck, or we've got... And Father, we want more than anything for those things to be behind us, but yet here we are. So Father, what I ask that you would do is to meet us right here in the way that you would give us courage to look beneath and to allow you to speak to us and to minister to us in the deepest places where we desperately need it, that we might not just have to live out a stronger no, we would truly understand what it means to find a better yes. So God, you do that work in us. We offer this to you in the name of your son, Jesus.